Welcome to Venturi's Voice. I'm Andy Davis. Venturi's Voice brings together thought leaders from a variety of industries who are taking the most innovative approaches to leadership and staffing. Imagine having a mix of experienced mentors sharing their secrets on leadership, recruiting, onboarding, engagement, and motivating, as well as stories on life lessons they've learned along the way. And it's free. If you're the head of a major corporation leading a team of hundreds or about to take on your first leadership role, this podcast is for you. This show is about you, and we're here to help you become the best leader you can be. Stay up to date with the latest shows by subscribing on iTunes and SoundCloud, as well as signing up to the newsletter at venturi-group.com, where you can find the latest IT jobs, talent, and blogs on all things leadership, staffing, and development. I'd love to hear from you, so drop me a line anytime via email at andy.davis@venturi-group.com. Any feedback or requests are always welcome. Enjoy the show.
Today's guest is John Klein, Senior Engineering Manager at Blue Apron. Thanks for taking the time, John. You know, I'm looking forward to the chat. I think there's a lot of different things that I kind of want to get stuck into. But I guess just before we kind of get stuck in, I thought it might be nice to just give, you know, everyone listening a little bit of context on you and, you know, your kind of background. And to be honest, like, you know, just how you ended up getting involved in tech and kind of progressing to, you know, where you are today.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, sure. So, my name is John Klein. I am currently the engineering lead for the growth and member experience teams at Blue Apron. So that kind of encompasses a lot of different things related to customer acquisition, marketing, our referral program, kind of working with merchandising, and a bunch of different other pieces that are, you know, related to what our customers and our chefs are experiencing as they use Blue Apron. Kind of the long story of how I got here. I have always been interested in tech, and programming and doing software. I, you know, started programming when I was in middle school, and, you know, kind of that was something that I always knew I wanted to do, and went to college, got a CS degree, and ended up going into the Air Force immediately after school. I did done ROTC and kind of used that to help pay for school, and did some general office work and nothing kind of that related to computer science or software tech, and kind of worked for Homeland Security for a bit. And after having done that for a few years after graduating, decided I, you know, wanted to get back into doing software development and have that kind of be my full-time gig. And so I started applying for jobs and got hired at eBay, where I worked on the homepage for eBay for a few years, starting out as a full stack developer and then moving into a manager of the team. And then after that, I moved to Blue Apron and here I am.
Amazing, mate. Well, thanks for that, John. I mean, the first thing that comes to mind as well is, you know, immediately being kind of thrown in to eBay as you kind of get back into software engineering. Like, you know, it's incredible just to think about the size and the scale of something like eBay, where they have a team that's just solely focused on the homepage. Is incredible. Was that an experience that you felt was kind of a great kind of it's not a starting ground, but, you know, a place to get back in to software engineering? Did you feel that kind of environment was, you know, worked in your favor?
Yeah, absolutely. That's kind of something I've thought a little bit about, but I think it was a great opportunity, particularly having, you know, the kind of software I developed before that. I had done a little bit of freelance stuff and, you know, just kind of like working on side projects on my own, but, you know, none of that really went through code review. None of that was, you know, anywhere close to anything that you would call scale. And so kind of my first 6 months at eBay was a lot, you know, huge learning curve on just, you know, getting used to professional software development in terms of, you know, what does that process look like, and, you know, doing code reviews and those sorts of things, to, you know, working a company that had a long history of software. You know, eBay had been around, you know, has been around for over 20 years. And so, you know, there's a lot of different code and a lot of different in-house technologies and all these different pieces, and understanding how all of that fits together while at the same time, you know, working on a application that, you know, gets, you know, over 60 million hits per day across the world, you know, translated into 22 different languages, and just understanding all of the technical complexities that come into that was, kind of getting maybe a little bit thrown into the deep end of the pool, but it was really a great way to, kind of get used to that and start with, some really good practices under my belt.
I agree. Yeah. It's really interesting because I think it's obviously everyone's biased towards their own opinions about their kind of experiences and what was kind of a great building ground. A lot of people are looking at thinking getting involved with a startup is a great way to kind of get thrown in the deep end. But regardless of whether it's with someone like eBay, who's a big player, or whether it's, a Series A, tech startup somewhere, I think the concept of just kind of being thrown in the deep end, something that for me personally was always the best way that I actually learned. But I find it interesting that it's not the same for everyone. It sounds like it worked for you as well. But when you actually kind of make the transition into a manager and actually a team lead, it's a whole different ballgame then, because you have to kind of manage expectations with other people, and not everyone is as comfortable as being thrown in the deep end as you might be. So you have to, I suppose, make those adjustments from a management perspective and kind of tailor what is going to work for different individuals.
That's been something I've thought about a lot. I think one of the big differences between kind of like, maybe the challenges you face coming in at a startup versus the challenges you face working at, a huge established company. When you're at a startup, one of the main problems is you just can't ship code fast enough, right? Like, there's always new features that you got to be developed. You're, racing against the clock, whether that's, in terms of runway or competition or whatever the case may be. And so it's just kind of like, how fast can you get stuff out and get stuff built? And, there isn't that necessarily established history of development. You're working to like build your own frameworks, and maybe you're buying some stuff off the shelf, but you're building out that ecosystem. So a lot of it's just like, how fast can you get stuff done? Whereas when you're working at one of the larger companies like eBay, it's, that speed isn't necessarily the issue. It's really about, okay, this thing needs to scale. It needs to fit the standards. There's a lot of internal standards, and that, you have to write your code to. And there's a huge risk portion. At eBay, at the time, we were only releasing, we're on a 2-week release schedule. And so we were, it wasn't necessarily continuous deployment or continuous integration. And that's something they were moving towards. But that, because of the huge risk associated with updating the homepage, if you had a failed update, that was, potentially millions of dollars that were, could be affected in sales. And so, some of the factors that come into risk mitigation, making sure that your code's super rock solid and well tested and all those sorts of things, whereas, coming from a startup, it's really about like, you're getting a lot of stuff done and you're putting a lot of code out there. But you're also kind of, maybe making some trade-offs in terms of, the quality or something like that, where, you might have to rewrite things in a couple of years once you're like, oh, we found out that this thing that we were doing before didn't scale once our, user base tripled in size or 10x'd or whatever the case may be.
Interesting. Yeah. So I guess it's just, different skill sets, but is there consistency with, transferable skills from, large to smaller companies that you think are always kind of relatively consistent, that, maybe now, since you're probably looking to bring on people and hire people, that you look for whether that's softer skills or technical skills, whatever the case may be, is there a set of kind of consistent skills that you kind of look at and think, that's really an appealing skill set? Someone who, you feel could be adaptable and work in any environment.
Yeah. I think a lot of it kind of just depends on like what stage, the organization is. When I've been at Blueprint for almost 2 years now, and, kind of what they were looking to do when around the time that I was hired was, they found the product market fit. They were starting to grow really fast and wanted to bring some, more maturity into their engineering organization. And so, they had a lot of folks that had been there for a while, but they were starting to, get into a point where some of the systems and stuff were, maybe hitting some of their points. They wanted to start, there was a big monolith. They wanted to start moving to microservices and these sorts of things. And you know, that was one of the reasons why at that time they, you know, were doing a lot of hiring in general, but, you know, specifically keeping an eye towards folks that were coming from larger companies like eBay or Google that could bring some of that, you know, kind of distributed systems knowledge or, you know, kind of broader system architecture in. And that's kind of, you know, that's something you need later in later stages of company. That's not something you need on day one, you know, kind of like, you know, your first year or two at a startup, it is about, okay, we got to make sure that like, we got to find that product market fit and we got to make sure that we're, you know, able to test and push code like that. And so, you know, that's kind of the point where we're at now where, you know, we have, you know, we started to mature as an engineering team and, you know, the kind of skill sets that we're looking for are folks who can, you know, have that kind of practice or experience where they, you know a good way to build, you know, distributed software and to build, you know, scalable systems, but are also flexible enough to know that like when we might need to, you know, make certain trade-offs in order to hit targets. You know, the competition, you know, particularly for Blue Apron is, you know, there's a lot more competition now than there was 2 years ago. And, you know, a key part that a lot of the companies in the space are trying to do is just build out things that differentiate them. And so, you know, there still is, you know, as we're getting into that kind of second stage of the company, that need to, you know, ship interesting things while still building out some systems that will support us for the next 5 or 10 years of the company.
I mean, it must have been, I suppose, fascinating slash a little bit intimidating to have joined at the time you did when they're going through, you know, such a growth period, because it's almost as though what was said last week's probably already changed. So, you know, how was that, you know, joining at that particular time? It's like, I don't know whether I've had someone on the show who actually joined at that point of kind of infliction, if you like. I've had people who've been there earlier and seen things grow, but actually being thrown in at that point of growth, you know, what was, I'd be fascinated to kind of learn what that experience was like. And
Yeah, that was a huge adjustment for me. I mean, coming, you know, eBay's been, you know, was starting to hit a point where they were starting to kind of turn speed up kind of their shipping cadence. But at the time, you know, it wasn't necessarily the like fastest shipping organization in the world. And my team had started on a project that was going to be about 8 or 9 months to kind of build a new version of the homepage. And, you know, that was like an 8 or 9 month long project. And we just get started on that. And then I come to Blue Apron and, you know, my team is working on like 6 or 7 different projects that are on the orders of, you know, a month or two at most. And that's kind of the time frame that we're operating on. And so just like the number of things that are going on is so much more. And the timeline that we're working on is so much faster that, you know, that took me a long while to kind of get used to and get accustomed to, having come from eBay where, you know, things were a little more, you know, thinking a little bit more longer term and thinking a little bit more strategically.
Interesting. Yeah. Yeah, I think so. And like say, and the fact that things are changing so rapidly, it's, you know, I think the rapid change, although in this instance, it's obviously, you know, relatively unique to Blue Apron, but the change of pace of technology just from a macro perspective is in itself challenging. Never mind a company that's going through, you know, rapid growth phases. And, you know, I was just wondering how much attention you have to pay to sort of trends and, you know, implementing, you know, various new technologies to make sure that you guys are keeping up to date and I suppose resetting any skills or learnings. You know, how conscious are you of that? And what, you know, if you are, I suppose, what kind of process do you go through to kind of ensure that you're, you know, managing to kind of stay on top of things?
Yeah. I mean, that's something that we work with a lot. I mean, as a team, we've kind of been trying to, you know, there's a lot of folks that just generally stay current with what's going on in the world. And we've been trying to kind of, you know, find good places where we can upgrade. You know, we're currently going through an upgrade from Backbone to React on our consumer front end. So our kind of previous front end was built in Backbone. We're migrating that to React. And that's been kind of a very interesting use case where, you know, a lot of folks had not worked with React prior to this migration. And, you know, we knew that it was going to be a little bit easier you know, both from a technology perspective of, you know, being able to build out kind of a more componentized framework than what we had done with Backbone, and then also from a hiring perspective in terms of like a lot of front-end folks, you know, React was a big recruiting part. You know, the fact that we weren't using it was, you know, hurting some of our recruiting efforts. So that's kind of an interesting use case where we'll try and, you know, bring in some of this stuff, you know, whenever we can on our infrastructure side. Like we're in the process, we moved off Heroku to AWS using, you know, Mesos and Marathon, and now we're updating to use Kubernetes. And so we're kind of trying to stay, you know, kind of current and figure out some technologies that are going to have a good ecosystem that we can get behind. But yeah, that pace of change has just, you know, exploded in the last, you know, 5 or 6 years. You know, a lot of, you know, I kind of focus more on the website of things, and the front end, you know, JavaScript world is changing, you know, almost every 2 or 3 months. And keeping up with that's hard. You know, I part of it is, you know, having folks on my team that I can kind of rely on that are, you know, maybe more tuned in than I am. But I usually go to, you know, a lot of meetups. I follow different folks on Twitter and, you know, and, you know, different Medium articles, and kind of try and stay current that way. And that helps a little bit. I think the big challenge for me just being a manager is, you know, if you don't use it, you lose it. And not being in the code as much every day, you know, does make it a little bit harder for me personally to just kind of like, you know, stay current. Like I've read a lot of React code, but I haven't written, you know, that much just to, you know, what I've got going on. And so it's something that, you know, particularly as management is, can be a hard thing to do.
And do you think that there it is still quite significant that, and important that managers are up to date technically? Do you still consider that to be, you know, really paramount?
Yeah. I mean, it kind of depends on the role. I mean, I think it's important for managers to have a good broad awareness at any level, but, you know, obviously the closer you are to the code and the, you know, if you're a line manager or first level manager, like, yeah, you need to have some awareness of what your engineers are doing on a day-to-day basis and a, you know, a good understanding of the technologies, because that's going to help you inform your decisions and planning and all of that stuff. So, you know, at least being aware and having kind of the high level overview of different technologies is super important. You know, whether you're the best developer at something and need to lead your team, I think that kind of just depends on your team structure. You know, if you're still coding a pretty significant portion of your time, or, you know, more than, let's say, 40%, then I think it is important that you, you know, are able to at least like keep up with your team. You know, maybe not necessarily lead from the front in that regard, but, you know, I think the less you're coding, the less that comes, you know, I mean, your ability to keep up is just going to be a lot harder.
Yeah, I think it's something to be said for that. I suppose, yeah, you're right. I think it's all circumstantial. You know, some people consider that, you know, great leaders don't necessarily have to be great technically, but I suppose it's just all how much involvement you have in the kind of projects and, like, say, with the line managers. So, yeah, it's interesting, though, isn't it, that kind of need for the skill set of technical but also really personable people is just something that is just, you know, skyrocketed as far as the demand from. So if you have those, you're pretty well positioned, I'd say, going forward.
Yeah, that's something that I've personally struggled with a lot. I mean, one of the big learnings I've had while I've been at Blue Apron has just been kind of the need as a manager to, you know, not just provide, you know, kind of some of the, you know, normal responsibilities of, like, you know, career development and, you know, project planning and that sort of thing, but also filling in gaps on your team as needed. You know, where, like, really understanding what are the skill sets and areas that are missing from your team and trying to fill in from that perspective. That's been an interesting learning. The technical thing is something that, you know, I've kind of struggled with a little bit. Part of the challenge of me moving into management kind of earlier-ish in my career was that it did, you know, kind of plateau my skills a little bit in terms of, you know, the fact that I moved to management meant I wasn't coding as much, which meant that, you know, my development skills changed. And, you know, I got better at, you know, design and architecture and some of the things that aren't, you know, necessarily just pushing a bunch of code. But my ability to push a bunch of code has not has not been able to develop at that same rate. And so that's kind of been something that's been an interesting thing in my career where, you know, after I was at eBay for a year before I moved into management, and it was about a year and a half until I, you know, was not coding a significant portion of my time. And, you know, that's kind of about where my coding skills kind of stopped. So I'm like basically that same level of a programmer as I was, you know, maybe 4 years ago. And I've gotten a little bit better and used some different technologies. But because I'm doing a lot more kind of design and code review and those sorts of things, like those skills have improved, but the other ones haven't. So it's just kind of interesting. I'm like trying to understand what is that value add that I can bring to the team. You know, and I'm personally much more focused on the like, collaboration and process and like, how does the team fit within the company and how do we get, you know, how can I get my team motivated around our projects and, you know, try and find stability and that sort of thing rather than, you know, necessarily being the person who's going to provide the best technical direction on the team.
Yeah. It's an interesting one and one that I think technical people now are finding really difficult to navigate. I know some companies are trying to provide, you know, kind of alternative kind of progression paths. So you can kind of stay in engineering but still progress through your career. But, you know, that's not everyone's doing that. You know, it's still quite a harsh, you know, change of direction. It's kind of one or the other still. And I think that that's a really difficult decision to make. You know, I'm sure it was for you to kind of take the, you know, especially if you're going down the kind of management and leadership role, because that in itself is kind of a new job, isn't it? Really, you know, some of the skills that are necessary for that is essentially a new job. So I do think that for whatever reason, it seems to be quite more prevalent in technical careers that people have to make this kind of really conscious decision, and it's never an easy one.
I think that, yeah, that's totally true. I don't know if I made it consciously. I think I'd always been attracted to kind of leadership, and you know, something I started to realize towards the end of my time in college was that I did like the, you know, I liked kind of the like organizational process and strategy setting and kind of like vision type stuff that you do as you get into leadership and management. And that was something that was kind of like way more interesting. And I thought that I was better at than I was at, you know, software engineering, but kind of my entry point to that was going to be, you know, I'm going to be a technical leader or someone who can provide, you know, insight based on a technology, a good understanding of technology. And, you know, I moved into management because the opportunity was there and it was something that I thought I always wanted to do, but I didn't realize that the impact that it was going to have on like my ability to stay technical and to kind of stay current, you know, until much, much later. So that was kind of an interesting thing, but yeah, there is something to, you know, what kind of leaders do companies need? And that was something when I was interviewing, you know, at Blue Apron and talking to a few different companies or a few companies that I talked to that, you know, I didn't make the technical cut for, you know, at management or otherwise. And that was just due to what they needed. You know, they were working on, you know, kind of like deep machine learning and, you know, or, you know, things that were something where having a really, really strong technical understanding were really important to your ability to just get, you know, to lead and work with the team. And that's something where, you know, at Blue Apron, a lot of our problems aren't necessarily the technologies that we're using. It's that we're trying to do a bunch of things as a company that haven't really been done before. And so we're having to like figure out processes and, you know, it's kind of like the business side of things and how can we bring technology to bear to solve a problem, not necessarily like having a really deep understanding of specific technical pieces.
Interesting. Really interesting, mate. Yeah. So, you know, as far as just staying engaged and stuff, is it something that a lot, like most people, engineering starts off as a hobby, I suppose, before it ever turns into a career. So would you say it's still something that, you know, in your kind of spare time, you enjoy reading about, you know, getting stuck into, I don't know, whatever you know, read online. Do you still see it in that to that same light?
Yeah, for sure. There's, you know, technology. I mean, it's kind of interesting because, you know, the last 10 years, I think the technology has gotten a lot more woven into just kind of like the everyday fabric of what we all do on a day-to-day basis. And so, you know, it's still something I enjoy reading about. I mean, I have a subscription to Wired, and that's probably one of my like favorite magazines to read, both from, you know, kind of their journalistic tendencies in their editorial piece, but also the fact that they're, you know, kind of looking at technology from an interesting lens and how it's going to, you know, shape the way that we work and what we do in the future. From a personal perspective, like, I still run my own website and I, you know, have a couple random projects that I like to keep up to date and that sort of thing. And so it is kind of interesting that I still have this, you know, hobby side that I'll use partially as a means to stay current, but partially as a means to, you know, kind of explore different things or get a better understanding of a technology that, like, maybe we're going to use at Blue Apron or something like that.
Well, I mean, it's so fascinating that, you know, that this has become, you know, the career that it is, because, you know, people like yourself, you know, something that you would have probably done anyway. Say, for instance, it never turned into, you know, the career that it is and how lucrative and, you know, substantially you can make it now. If it never would have worked out that way, I'm sure you still would have done it. And that's really the ultimate goal. And I think that that's, you know, such a amazing evolution that that's actually happened, you know, beyond just, you know, the classic, you know, athletes or, you know, whatever the case may be. People aspire to be like that. Now it's really opened this whole new opportunity to people who are actually being able to carve a career out of this thing. It's really interesting.
Yeah. I mean, if you would have asked me when I was, you know, like, I was a kid and I was like, oh yeah, I want to, like, I like programming. This is a fun thing. I want, you know, maybe want to do this full time. You know, if he asked me then or told me then what I was doing now or what, you know, the world was going to be like now, I would have, like, hardly believed it. I mean, my, you know, part of that was just, like, my understanding and exposure to what the tech world was like was, you know, really limited. But the other part of it is just how much that, you know, had the importance of software in terms of doing anything in the world, you know, regardless of whether you're, you know, what you might call a tech company or not, is has gotten so much more important. And the need for engineering and the need for software and the need for technical literacy has just gotten that much more over the last 10, 15 years that it's, you know, it's incredible.
I think it's really cool. And I wonder and think about sometimes now is this next generation going to be as engaged and as passionate? And it's a really broad statement, I know. You know, obviously there's a lot of people who are still super passionate about, you know, engineering. But I just wonder whether, you know, this next generation of you know, technical talent will look at it more of a pursuit of a career as opposed to it kind of starting off as, you know, something that they were just into or passionate about, and whether that will actually change, you know, outcomes, change, you know, to some of the fabrics and how quickly we've actually progressed. I just, it's a big thought, and there's obviously, you know, no answer to it at this point, but I just always find that an interesting thought to consider.
Yeah, I think the maybe more interesting thing for me is kind of like what are software engineers or, you know, technical folks, people who are interested in technical folks, going to be like having grown up with this and having grown up with, you know, smartphones and the, like, internet everywhere and those sorts of things. You know, like, I'm still at that age where, like, I, you know, we got the internet, you know, we had a computer and we had the internet in, like, 1998. So we were kind of ahead of the curve, maybe a little bit for most folks, but that was still, like, you know, it was a big computer in my, like, you know, in the my mom's room that I had to, like, go and use, and it wasn't something that was just there and immediately available to me all the time. And, you know, it'll be interesting to see what folks who have been around technology and have had such a close experience with it their entire lives, you know, how they see the world and what their, you know, what their understanding is and how they're thinking about things will be really important or interesting to see play out. You know, I think the, like, passion, you know, I don't see the demand for software engineers or for technical folks decreasing anytime soon. I mean, in the U.S. at least, there's still, you know, something like 20% more open roles than, like, available people to fill it or something like that. I mean, the demand is so far outpacing, you know, the number of folks that can actually do those jobs. And that's, you know, that's not something that's going to go away anytime soon. And there's, you know, as long as they're, like, that means that engineering is going to be well paid until that happens. You know, it's still going to be a really good, great paying job, which means that people are going to find their way to it, whether that's out of passion or out of, you know, a desire to, you know, make a comfortable living and, you know, have some upward mobility. Either way, I think, you know, both of those are great things. And I think something I've been working on personally. I work with a mentorship program through a nonprofit here in New York that works with students from, you know, some of the local colleges from underrepresented groups in tech. And I think that's kind of the biggest, you know, ethical and moral challenge that anyone in tech has to face right now is really like, how can we make sure that, you know, this opportunity and this, you know, career path that, you know, is a very, you know, great access into, you know, a solid, you know, middle class or upper middle, you know, upper class living is available to everyone. You know, and that's something that people from, you know, all backgrounds can, you know, have access to and can contribute to, whether or not they have that, you know, as something, you know, from an early age or not.
I agree. I think it's a massive issue. I think, you know, everyone seems to be paying a lot of attention to it, and rightly so. I think for me, it always starts at the education level, and I think just raising the awareness, I think, is long overdue, and it's probably still underrepresented in kind of, you know, the traditional education settings that, you know, engineering just doesn't, you know, like I say, it's massively underrepresented and, you know, unnecessarily so.
Yeah, for sure. I mean, I think, like, you know, kind of my mind, the first step is just like some basic technical literacy. I mean, making sure that people who are going through school, like, you know, similar to how there's, you know, like personal finance classes and those sorts of things, it needs to be like a technical literacy of like, not everything on the internet is true. And like, here's a high level, like how the internet works and how different pieces of technology work and those sorts of things. But definitely exposure to, you know, some sort of software engineering or kind of this like programming or, you know, understanding logic and these sorts of things would be hugely important. I mean, for everyone, you know, going forward. I mean, if you can like figure out how to program Excel or Google Sheets to like, you know, do different things, like that's going to be valuable in almost any career field. Or if you can, you know, write, you know, if you're a journalist and, you know, you can figure out how to create your own space or understand like how to securely transmit information, you know, to folks using, you know, the the secure upload things that like journalists use for, you know, people who want to like send them confidential information or whatever. Like knowing what that stuff is going to be hugely valuable in anyone's career. So I think like that like technical literacy is kind of the first step, and then yeah, making sure that, you know, people that have can get more exposure to programming or software development if that's something that they're interested in or that they get excited about.
Agreed. Well, you know what, John, it's been really fascinating talking with you today. Thank you so much for taking the time. We're about 30 minutes now. I know you've got a million and one things to get on with, so I'll let you get to it. But yeah, just really appreciate the chance to chat with you, and hopefully we can do it again soon.
Thanks for listening to Venturi's Voice. Please make sure you subscribe at iTunes or SoundCloud, or check out the website venturi-group.com and keep up to date with the latest IT jobs, talent, news, and podcasts. Or drop me a line. It's andy.davis@venturi-group.com. Any feedback, topics, or guest suggestions are always welcome. And thanks again for listening to the show. See you next time.